Hey, kingly brothers and heroic husbands around the planet. Welcome to this episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In today's episode, we welcome in Taylor Cantrell. Taylor is a men's group facilitator, dedicated athlete, and fiance with a day job managing pre-veterinary travel programs for mostly American university students across 8 countries. He grew up in the American Midwest and has been living in Chiang Mai, Thailand for the last 10 years. Taylor Cantrell, brother, it's amazing to have you on. This is a really special moment for me personally, just having you on, sir. You're welcome to the show.
Super amazing to be here. Happy to be here chatting with you, and I'm excited to dive in.
Just a bit of background to the guys listening in. Taylor and myself, on a weekly basis, it's been over a year now, we have... Taylor has been in that group for, we'll get the full juice and the details in that, but for a number of years before myself. But I've been in the group with Taylor co-leading, I think it's about the last year or a little bit longer. So it's like every single week we just knuckle down, we hit the dojo, do incredible deep men's work with amazing men from around the globe. And it's for that reason, just I don't know of any guy, Taylor, and I say this to you directly, I've said it to you, you know, off recording as well so many times. I don't know of any guy, there's very few guys that I hold in as high a regard in deep men's work. And hence I could think of nobody better than you. It's like I really wanted to bring one episode, if not a few episodes, onto the topic of men's work, you know, a men's group. Cause I just have this in massive bias in me where, you know, men's work for me, having a men's circle, that's the single most transformative healing experience I've had as a husband. You know, we're talking to husbands now, but just as a man. And you're up there, like you're just an absolute legend for me. So I'm so excited to just have this conversation with you, to tap in on your experience as a man directly. You know, on the topic of it, I think so many guys can get really nervous. It's like, oh fuck, you know, men's work and, oh man, you know, like men's circle and all, is that all just fucking emotions and all this ucky, icky shit? You know, it's like there can be so many. I had them. But in today's episode, I'd really love to tap in, not from a theoretical perspective of, you know, men's circle, what it's about, but to hear what your journey was in coming to men's work. And I think if we start off there, it'd be the most potent place for guys to sort of vicariously join a powerful man like yourself on what your journey was, your experience. And then we'll go into the takeoff, like sort of what a men's circle can feel like and show up like on in the dojo. So Taylor, my first main curiosity is like, how did you come to men's work?
This is a big story. I feel like a lot of my life led to being in a men's circle and eventually, yeah, facilitating. I was struggling. I would say that's just like the main reason. I had stuff that I needed to share. I didn't know who to share it with. I needed to talk to other guys about their experience with what was going on. And basically for me, I was in a relationship where I fell in love really hard and quicker than I expected after a long period of not being in a relationship. A part of me emerged that was really vulnerable and really tender and wanted to be heard and wanted to be cared for. And it came up way earlier than my partner was ready for. And I didn't know how to handle it either. And a bunch of other things happened very early on that just made it clear that I had some things I needed to work out with other guys. And I was also super, super nervous coming to men's work. And I'm super glad that we're here a year into co-facilitating with you. This is a cool way to celebrate it. And even just in the last few weeks, made my first comment that, oh, I walk into men's work ready. I used to walk in with my heart beating a little bit disembodied, like, oh, what am I gonna have to share today? What vulnerable part of myself have I never spoken to that I'm about to give words to and present to these guys who I'm still just learning to trust. And that took me a really, really long time. So anyway, the relationship is really what brought me to it. I also really, really struggled with anxiety when I joined. And this is something I'd never dealt with any mental health issues up to that year of life. And I was in my 30s. So I kind of thought I knew what I was about and what was inside of me, and I was wrong. And I wasn't dealing well with new parts of me coming forward. So many more bits of it. We can dive into that too, but that's what brought me in, and what has held on to me is that, like, it's just for every part of me. Like, I just feel like a better person every single week. I keep uncovering more parts of myself. I keep being honored by other men's vulnerable shares. Sometimes you and I have shared this before, but sometimes my pits are wet, my palms are sweaty by the end of 2 hours on a Zoom call with our guys, because it's so potent. I'm just locked in the whole time with, like, holy shit, people are healing. Holy shit, people are transforming right in front of my eyes. Where I'm hearing things from their hearts that I've never heard from anyone before. Like, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to be involved with. So that's part of what keeps me there. But I was brought into it through pain, struggle, lack of confidence, all of those negative things that I knew I needed some help with.
Yeah. I'm smiling there about the sweaty armpits. It's bringing me back to a memory of studying as a physiotherapy student back years ago, and I was on an orthopedic placement, and I had the privilege to step in for a morning with an orthopedic surgeon. And I remember, you know, he was just so chilled out. I actually was looking on at him performing the surgery, and he was he at one point he's like, "Mark, what music do you like?" And I'm there sort of, you know, just trying to be quiet. I was actually trying to be invisible in the room. It's like, you know, just I had this psychological thing. It's like, oh, fuck, you know, just the surgeon, and here's me, this, you know, mere mortal student here. He's like, "What music do you like?" And it's like, "What?" He's like, "Just get my iPod there." It's just like, just click on whatever music, you know, just go into the library. And I put on U2, and he was like, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm feeling you too." I was like, "What the fuck is this dude about?" So on one level, I'm like, he's so fucking chilled out. But just, I remember, like, he did, I don't know, two and a half hours of surgery. I don't know, was it two or three operations? And then we went to the changing rooms. And I distinctly remember when he took off his top, his t-shirt underneath, from the top, from both tops of the shoulders all the way down to his lower back, was drenched in sweat. And it still comes out to me to this day. It's, you know, he was so relaxed. And I can now, you know, with more experience as a man, maybe not to that length than my t-shirt, but the underarms, it's that level of presence. It's that level of focus that when you're in there for 2 hours locked in with guys, with your whole nervous system, you know, just completely in that zone. I don't know of many other areas of my life that I lock in like that. So I can definitely resonate with that. One curiosity I have, Taylor, is you were mentioning about your nervousness going in, and, you know, you spoke about your nervousness of being vulnerable and, you know, sharing more parts of you, like this idea of, like, reconnecting with parts of you that hadn't been shared, etc., etc. But had you any nervousness in you about other guys? Because I know, you know, a lot of guys, we haven't had culturally a very safe upbringing. And it's like no right or wrong. It's just like sort of mechanistically, as men, you know, there's this sort of bullshit that men don't want to talk, you know, and that's total rubbish. So, like, I take that off. Every single man wants to talk, but not every single man has found a place where it's safe to talk. Because I think most men try to find in little mini gaps, you know, that point of the guy after the gym, or, you know, in the jiu-jitsu, or you're out for a walk, and they try to say, you know, just test the water. It's like, oh, you know, I've been feeling a bit off, or, oh, my relationship. And most of the times it doesn't come off. They don't feel safe, and then they retract back in. So there can be a lot of trust issues opening up with other guys. What did that look like for you? What were your sort of fears? Now, going back to just before entering, or those first few sessions, did you have fears about how you'd be received by guys? Yeah, I'm just curious what that looked like for you.
The first thing that comes up is I really like presenting as strong. I like looking strong. I like looking confident. I like looking like I have things together. And I never realized how attached I was to that until I realized that the reason I was coming to men's work was to share other parts of myself where I felt weak, where I felt confused, where I didn't even know what I was feeling. And I was just going to have to blabber and speak confusing words from deep in my heart until I landed on an emotion, or couldn't even speak the emotion. I needed someone else to say, "It sounds like you're sad." And then I realized, oh shit, you're right. God damn it. I don't even know what my emotions are. Right. It was these shadier parts that I hadn't had a relationship in which I could share for a really long time. And it wasn't in my relationship with Jordan, who I'm now engaged to. I wasn't finding that I could bring those things there, even though I really wanted to. And can now more than ever, but at that point we weren't ready for that, and I was just coming in hot. So every time I worried that people might judge me as not strong, every time I worried people might judge me as like not put together as a man, or not a respectable person, not somebody with authority. And I still struggle with that every day. I still see myself projecting that image and have to remind myself, wait a minute, is this actually a place where I can share something deeper and softer? And more and more often I'm finding those places years into this work. But in the beginning, it was terrifying. It's fucking terrifying. Even though we're in a Zoom group. So like these guys are all over the world. I don't know them. In the beginning, I don't know them. I know them better than I know many people that I've had long-term relationships in person with now. But there should have been like no consequences. It was sort of a situation where I could have just been like, I don't care what the fuck you think. Here's what's going on in my life. I don't even know what it is, but I'm just going to say it. And I still couldn't even do that. I mean, I was really fearful. I wanted to walk into any new space, whether online or in person, and present as strong and not requiring space. That's another big part of it. But I needed space. I needed some space help for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get that. And I just, as you're speaking there, it's bringing me back to my first men's group meeting, and it was online. And I remember my mind, it's like the leader, he was there, and he'd sort of have a sort of like a 5-10 minute teaching or sharing about his week, and it was sort of leading up to the topic. And I remember like this dude was in men's work. I found out like I had read on the website, he's like, it's in it 20 or 30 years, it's a real sort of old guard, incredible experience. And I remember my mind, like he told about this story about how he was completely out of integrity. There was a thing of like he had got some service in and he was meant to pay, but he didn't go on with the full service and he didn't pay it, and he was called out in public. And I remember having like a part of my mind was really fucking judgmental, and he was talking about his emotions and he felt ashamed of it, and then he called the person, and my mind was, part of it was cutting him to shreds. It was like, sort of along the lines, what the fuck am I here for? Like this dude should have his shit sorted. How the fuck, it was, if now just live, I think I didn't go through this much commentary, but if that part of my mind was given full microphone coverage at that point, it'd be like, what the fuck am I doing here? You're a fucking facilitator. You should have your shit sorted. You're meant to be perfect. I'm in the shit. How the fuck am I meant to trust you? Because you're not perfect. And I now know it's like, wow, the amount of judgment, and like what you were saying, it's like this inbuilt persona of I've got to have my shit sorted. Otherwise, I'm fucking taken down. But I just realized in that moment, like looking back now, it's like the amount of judgments I was bringing in, ultimately on myself, I know that, but the projection onto the leader. And yet, there was nothing more liberating for me. I don't know if you had that experience, but there was nothing more liberating for me to see guys sharing their vulnerabilities, to see guys that had been leading, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 10 years, 3 years into it. Simultaneously, badass. I had this admiration for these guys, what they were doing in their lives, yet they were having issues with their kids. Yet they had a week where, you know, they just were like caught up in sadness for 3 or 4 days. But they were okay with that. That for me was a revelation. I was like, what the fuck? I just never had matched strength and vulnerability being together. I'm curious what's coming up for you. But like, what were in those initial days? Do memories come? Like, where did, was there one point, or did it happen over the course of time, Taylor, where you went and crossed the energetic bridge from, you know, this idea, I have to portray strength by having my shit sorted, to just going, ah, I find my strength by being vulnerable. Was there one moment, or did that happen like invisibly over months?
I don't know if there's one moment, but I will say I've never taken it more seriously as part of my mission every time I show up now, to be curious, to dig, what have I not spoken to maybe ever before? What have I not spoken to recently that's still an issue? I don't want to admit that it's still an issue. I wanted to just share it once or twice and then pretend like it was gone. So it's there, that it is my mission now every time I show up. But I had to learn that. And I guess what stands out the most to me is like the pause after someone shares something where they're out of integrity, or when they encountered their own weakness, or wow, they're falling apart, they don't know themselves, they weren't conscious, whatever it was. The pause after that share, and when I look around, I see the other guys in group and just see them holding space, accepting, and not judging, or maybe judging, but they're holding space for their judgment too. They're not letting it break that moment. That's incredibly powerful. And that's what I encountered, was just like that space to just at least give expression to what my experience is enough out loud that other people could witness it, that I could witness it. And then we can deal with what to do next after that. But there were things about myself I wasn't even expressing because I was ashamed of them. And I've seen that in other guys too. When weeks or months in, they bring something up they've never brought up before that they expected maybe judgment of, or they expected to be shamed for, or they expected to fall apart when they shared it. And instead, there's just a, yeah, you're a human too, thanks for sharing that, response. And it's just that it's, there's like an emptiness to that. And there's also a lot of love, but it's not what I've found in men's group isn't like what you'd get from your mom. It's not like, oh, I'm so sorry that's happening to you. Sympathetic love. It's really just like, yeah, you're a human and I'm a human too. And that's where you're at. So where do we go now? And it's just from I'm trying to embody it in the voice I'm using right now, but that's the kind of sense that you get from a bunch of guys holding space for someone sharing something vulnerable that they expect a reaction to. They don't necessarily get it. Then they just get, okay, so what's the next step? Or that was a big share. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. It is magical. I had, well, you know, but like sharing with the guys listening in, I had a big major moment just this week. In our group, you know, and we lead, there's certain ways of leading men's groups, and some ways is like, as you lead, you know, you're the leader and you're supporting the guys, but we definitely lean in and embodying as much as possible, you know, the greatest courage to embody. We push each other off, sort of off screen or outside of the meeting to do that. But this week's just sharing with the guys coming in, and like the guys listening in, I just wanna, like, I always sort of bring this, is like, you know, I'm podcast host and coaching guys around the planet, you know, to be the husband she brags about. But part of that is just continually dealing with the shit that was coming up. And there was a major memory for myself, and Taylor and the guys held space for her. And I shared it. It was like about, you know, original reasons why I left my job in physiotherapy to get into men's work, et cetera, et cetera. And like, you know, you guys listening in, you know, it's like, I've been radically honest about that and transparent. The relationship dynamics were fucked up, like radically fucked up. But there was this resentful part of me that was sort of blaming my woman, blaming my queen. It's like, oh, you know, I left, and there was this part of me, I wanted to be witnessed. I laid in the group. It's like, I wanted to be witnessed and heard and seen. But ultimately it was like, for the amazing man I was, because it's like, ultimately I saved my marriage by changing career before I was ready, because, you know, my wife had, so it was whore jealousy issues. That was the underlying story. And I just wanted the guys to, you know, I think you triggered this, Taylor, when you said, you know, this, it's not like a mother's love. I wanted the mother's love. I wanted, it's like, oh, Mark, you know, like, good boy, you know. And it was, I didn't get that. I was like, I was seen, I was heard, and I was safe. But I also was rattled with, well, Mark, what I did was multiple different, there was amazing feedback, not to go into it in depth, but it was like, ultimately it was like, well, that's on you. Or what if that was on you? What if Matilda's response was perfectly natural? Where was she on point? Where did she actually save the relationship by how she was following her emotional guidance? And it was like, oh man, where's my mommy's love? You know, it's like, but it's like, that's not the a man's way. You know, it's just, it's loving, it's accepting, but there's not taking any bullshit. And there's this beautiful smelling in, no, I'm not going to take that story. That's such a quality for me. Just that distinction. And I think it's a really important distinction as men, because we haven't been initiated. It's like, your wording of, oh, it's not a mother's love. I think quite often we want the mother's love, but a mother's love doesn't initiate a man. It's a man's love.
That's what I was going to say. I think there's, even though we haven't even talked all of this stuff out, like, there's not actually a ton of theoretical agreement among guys in our group. We just show up, express what we're experiencing, hold space for each other, challenge each other. But I think it's that we have a trust among the men in our group that healing will come from ownership, not from diving into that story. If there's any level of victimness in it, that's, you're just not going to get better. You might feel more of your emotion for a little bit, and that might be important. If you haven't felt it yet, it's important to express it too, but the healing will come from owning whatever there is for you to own in the whole story. That's where you just sit up a little bit straighter at the end of your share. You're like, okay, this is me. That was also me. Okay, fuck, that was me too. And I'm also right here, and it's different now. Like, that's the sort of feeling that I get when I share something that I fucked up on. And I know I have to bring it, and I have to process it, and then I have to hear the challenge. But then I get to hear the challenge, and I get to step into my present self, who has fully accepted what I did and wants to own it better. And that's then who I get to embody by the end of a share about something I'm ashamed of. But I can't do that all myself. I try, you know, and I try to build that in, but it's way more powerful when you have other men to challenge you to it. And we know from our reading about men's work that that's always been the case. That other men are necessary to bring you to your highest embodiment.
Yeah, that's just magic. That's I really want guys to hear that listening in. You know, you can't do that by yourself. I know myself, like, for years, for years. I had the comfort zone of always reading the books, you know, vociferously reading peak performance, just all different types of books, spirituality. And yes, it planted tons of seeds. But it's only having the support of men. And it's like, it's, you know, it's this idea in modern life of the lone wolf. Oh, you know, again, what you were saying, it's like, it's the strong. We've been sold this bullshit story where like a strong man should be like just confident by default. And yet, you know, any person that's gains major success, and we'll call it like success mixed with fulfillment. It's like the Tony Robbins thing, you know, success just by itself, it's like, is actually more empty, but it's like success with fulfillment. So with that definition of success, every man and woman by extension, when we're speaking about men, every man that reaches the top or his fullest potential of success and fulfillment, he has relied on other men. He has relied on mentors. He has relied on coaches. He has relied on groups. He has relied on masterminds, whatever it is. We're talking about men's work, but like, there's just this fundamental truth which contradicts the, you know, the cultural messaging that we've had where you have to rely. How is that for you? I know you speak passionately about that now, and it's fully like in every cell of your body and nervous system now, where you, like, your greatest power has come from leaning in on other guys. But were there any, I'm curious, Tedder, were there any points where you rebelled against the system? Like, were there any moments when after certain sessions, certain shares, you were like, fuck this. No, it's like, this is not the process. This is not for me. Or was it always in alignment with you as a man?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know how that. Let me marinate on that for a second. But I want to not miss. I've sort of talked so far about like bringing my weaker side or vulnerable side and needing a space for that. And that's not to say that we don't want to have strength in ourselves or challenge each other to bring strength to their lives when in our group, right? It's just that we believe we need space for that vulnerable, tender, soft side too. And that ultimately makes us stronger, because there's places to fake it till you make it out in the world. When you're bringing your warrior to a negotiation, that's fine. There are places for that, but it just can't be your whole life. You can't fake until you make everything in your life. That ultimately you will leave parts of yourself unhealed and unspoken to, and something will rear up and hold you back. So I just want to make sure that we speak to that. Powerful men in our group. So it's like, I want to not miss that side of it.
I want to ride off that wave. Actually, I love this. This is like spontaneously come. Let's go deep dive in the strength, and I'll circle back on that other thing if there were certain things that kick back in for you, because they're two really potent things. I totally get. I love that you're bringing this up spontaneously. The celebration of strength, because it's really important for guys to listening in. Because again, if that goes unspoken, yeah, putting too much weight on, oh fuck, that's actually one of the worst fears of guys. Like, is it all about emotions? Is it all about weakness? It's like, I don't want fucking 2 hours every single week about fucking, you know, just talking about the shitty struggling parts. I really hear you. It's like one of the main learning points for me too was the counterbalance of that, where, and it was actually, I think I got way more comfortable speaking about my issues and my, you know, the vulnerable side. Well, it's actually not the vulnerable, the weakness side. I became quite quickly accustomed to that. One of my biggest challenges coming in was when guys challenged me. It's like, guys, what are you celebrating unapologetically this week? I'm like, I don't know how to fucking say a sentence that just goes uncensored, you know. I was fucking shit hot in bed this week. It, like, whatever I was putting into practice, David, I fucking nailed it. Or, you know, business, I just got a new client. It's like, it just was amazing. I coached my ass off. I'm proud of myself. That was, my nervous system did not know how to do that. That was actually probably looking back now, thanks for bringing it up, that was probably one of the most nervous things for me as a man. So it is a really important part. Just like you, like a men's group wants your embodiment of strength, like real strength.
What would hold you back from celebrating that? What would go on? Do you have specific emotions or stories that would go on right before you underexpressed a success, a win from the week?
What was going on? Like, I mean, it was just raw fear. Because I know, like, growing up, my table growing up, lots of laughter, lots of love, lots of everything. But there was a wicked, what do you call the strike in the tail? I'm thinking like I just have the image of a scorpion. You know, like the scorpion's pointy tail. Just that's what happened to me growing up. It was like there was a quick-witted joke. And underhandedly, there was a put down. You know, you could do the normal things. Yeah, you could do the soccer, you know, and the Gaelic football, the Irish football, main national sport, and you could do school. But it's like I could do it to a point. But if I did anything outside of that, it just, that was not known by my parents, was not the known standard norm, except the norm of my family. There was a put down. There was a joke. There was like, oh, who the fuck does he think he is? Blah, blah, blah. And I just took that on as like inherently true. You know, if you celebrate, in Ireland, we say, it's actually lost in my language. It's like, oh, what's the term? It's actually a good sign that it's lost. Self-praise is no praise. That's one of like these classic things that said, it's like self-praise is no praise. Like, and that's a common thing. It's like, you know, and it's actually said, I heard that quite a bit. It's like, oh, self-praise is no praise. You know, like you come in, you're super proud of it. Oh, self-praise is no praise. Like you can't big it up. Like it's inherently arrogant to celebrate your thing. So yeah, there was a lot of shame and fear.
The point of that is that the Irish saying is that you should wait till someone else recognizes it. That's the praise. Is that the idea? I don't know if there's any wisdom there to mine, but I'm looking for
No, well, I think like, ultimately, like culturally speaking, like even if they sort of pretend to think that, oh no, you should wait till somebody else praises. Well, if that's, you know, knowing Irish culture, that's the inherent thing. Self-praise is no praise. So nobody is comfortable with praising themselves. That's why most of the Irish population didn't fucking like Conor McGregor, because like Conor McGregor, definitely on the way to the top, is like the most self-praising human being on the planet. And it's like, that's why you know me behind the scenes. I talk about Conor McGregor because, you know, whatever about he's got to the top, I think he loses intentionality because he's had that much money. That's just a very natural thing. But like he just unapologetically praised himself to the point at which every single cell in his body was like, I'm a fucking rock star in this. There was a part of me that just loved that. And yet it wasn't allowed. So no, Irish culture, I don't think there was any wisdom in it. It just was like this comfort in putting ourselves down ultimately. And not celebrating our uniqueness and our strengths and our successes, or just not being comfortable with that.
Yeah. I mean, what I imagine in that sort of situation is you get knocked down by somebody who's jealous that you're standing out and that there's not space for you to take the spotlight for even just a second. You might outshine them. And that's the opposite of how I feel in our group. There's so much room for everyone to succeed. Like there's no zero sum game between each of the guys in our group having an awesome life, an awesome relationship, a great career, growing beyond old patterns. Every win is a win for everyone that everyone gets to enjoy. And people race to all recognize any step forward, because they're so excited having shown up in group, having provided challenge, having held space, that move has been made, right? It's just, there couldn't be anything more opposite what you're describing in terms of self-praise is no praise.
It's so potent. I'm so happy you brought up this counterbalancing point. I had no notes coming in today. Like sometimes I have notes. I just knew it was like, Taylor, Mark, come on, we fucking...
We'll go.
We don't know, like, just transparency with the guys listening in, we like have a 2-hour meeting, and in that meeting it's like sharp, we stop sharp at the end, but like where we struggle to stop sharp, like we're meant to have like half an hour before the meeting, half an hour afterwards. Very often I have to sort of really test myself. It's like, Taylor, I gotta fucking go, man. You know, it's like you've got your evening, you've got your beautiful woman, I've got work, and like in my time zone. But it's just like, yeah, just going where we go with passion. What was coming up as you were saying that, it's like I was so proud of the culture of the group, and I do believe I've had a number of experiences with different men's groups. I think that's also the other thing. Different men's groups. Some guys listening in might have been in a men's group. It's not an inherent part. Some I found really effective, others not so. I am completely biased in this, but this is the best men's group ever. Because I know we've been like incessantly like just finding if then pre-commitments to just get the nudge. But with the celebration of strengths and wins, do you remember there recently, I was like, we were so proud of the culture that is set in the group and has been leaning in. Do you remember one of the guys, it's like we were at the very end and, you know, like just that time sensitivity, like we really just on the hour, that's it, boom, 3-2-1, ho, we end the meeting. But one of the guys at the very end, it was like, whoa, 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 you know, like just, and it was like, okay, what the hell? What does he want to share at this part of the meeting? But it was beautiful. It was like, I just have been waiting here. I didn't get the chance, but he celebrated like this astounding win that he had during his week. That just brought tears to the back of my eyes. It's like, wow. Like that meant so much to him. We celebrated it the next week. We actually just reflected it back. There was one guy had missed. It was like, man, you know, this guy, we don't mention names just for confidentiality purposes, but it's like, just to reflect back to the group, that was incredible embodiment of just this immense desire to celebrate yourself and to bring acknowledgement from the group. That was such a win. It was just beautiful seeing the guy passionately at the end. I took a lot from that personally, because there are times I don't celebrate the things, or I let them go under the bridge. It was beautiful to witness that in the guy.
Yeah, and the coolest thing about that moment, because I used to, and I've witnessed other men use wins to try to cover up their bad point in the week or the day or whatever else, right? And you know, there's some healthy emotional regulation that comes with that, but it's almost like you're denying how bad you feel or how confused you are, how anxious or depressed or whatever it is, if you have to then go quickly rush to search to find something that's good and then throw it on top, sticker it over. And it wasn't like that at all, this moment you're describing. He had shared a bunch that was really tough and that he was really struggling with. But it was really that he had just finally owned and expressed all of that. And then there was space where it just emerged. This win came forward in his awareness, and he couldn't help but share it with full excitement. So he went all the way down, he went all the way up, but it wasn't. You know, earlier when you were talking about not celebrating those wins, I was kind of thinking that there have been times when I embodied sort of just like a narrower bandwidth of emotional expression. I would never admit to feeling really shitty or really confused or panicked or any of those things. I just bottle it in, keep my face. I'm not feeling that. The people can't tell. And I would also never get super excited and like joyful or proud. I wouldn't have that either. And I would say that through men's work, I've accessed more and more of that. I've had the courage to go all the way up without worrying that I'm going to be judged or slapped back down, and all the way down without worrying that anyone's going to have to feel like they have to rush in to fix it, because they won't. They'll just witness it. Or that I am losing my credibility or something else by sharing how deep my pain goes in any one moment. So it's just expanded the possibility of what I can express, which also just helps me realize, like, I was always kind of I was always experiencing those things just like deep inside and not really owning it. And so that I have slowly peeled it a little bit higher and a little bit lower means I can just be a bigger person in some sense, just more dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's core parts of what you've said the whole way through, Taylor, that I really love. It's like you mentioned earlier on, like the new parts of me coming forward and, you know, guys just not knowing themselves. And it is that part, you know, it's like these parts of the emotional spectrum. I know for sure. It's like, and I believe I say 99%, but to be honest, I think it's like more like 100%, or maybe just that 1%. I haven't met those guys, and like they grew up with the perfectly embodied masculine feminine in their house, and they went to the ultra exceptional school, or they were homeschooled and they've been initiated. They went out to the fucking Amazon and went through, like, I don't know, like 6 years of initiation where he rites of passage, and it's like, okay, that 1%, well, you're probably not listening in because you probably have it nailed anyway, and that's good. But I believe like 100% of guys listening in at some point can resonate with that. Like, I really think the growing up in modern culture, so much of what you're saying, there's like that emotional spectrum, both, and it's not like positive or negative. I try to really bring the guys as like this, they're not negative emotions, they're challenging. They're like, but there's the whole spectrum, a whole live life. You're going to have all the emotions. It's like the artist. Like, if you're an artist, you want you want all the colors, then you pick and choose as to which picture you want to, that expresses you. But we cut out become the shadow emotions. We cut out the grief, the sadness, you know, the rage. There's so much of our emotionality there that's just not allowed. It's like the really generic growing up. It's like, you know, when you fell down on the soccer pitch or in the physical education class, you know, and you were hurt and you cried as a 3, 4, 5, 6 year old, you know, get up your pussy, get up. There's this type of mentality from, you know, other kids and your dads and men around. But also, it's really important. It is, you know, what you say. There's that opposite side, which doesn't get spoken as much. And hence, it's so important, like this, the celebrating of success. What has been eradicated as well are like the expansive emotions, the joy, the bliss, the I'm on fucking top of the world. And I'm just, my nervous system just wants to communicate that, because I know myself is like growing up, and just inviting guys, you know, listening in, there's never a passive listen here in this podcast. Like, really just reflect, like, what was that? Like, what memories are coming up for you as you listen in vicariously to myself and Taylor? But I remember, you know, like if I call it now with my current language, like my full masculine expansive essence, you know, it's like, I'd come in totally boisterous, because why? Boisterous. And I might be like taking down my older brothers who were having a fight, because why? There's aggressive play, it's loud, there's joking. And then you come in, it's like, oh, you know, be quiet, boys. Sit down, do your homework. You know, and like it's understandable in every given moment in many senses, but there is a learning which is like my fullness, my joy, my bliss, my like, and the expressions of that, shouting, singing, running around the home, et cetera, et cetera. It's not welcome. And there is a turning down of the volume. So I just love, you know, you bring in that emotional spectrum. What does that trigger in you? You know, just, I know you've spoken to it, but
Well, one of the emotions that I never admitted, or maybe I would only partially admit to having, was anger. And for me, this was something that I, looking back on my family, really clearly see why I didn't admit to anger and couldn't own anger. And looking back on why I joined men's group, I didn't know it at the time, but I was joining because I was angry and I didn't know it. I was angry and it was coming out as anxiety. It was coming out as just feeling out of control, racing thoughts. I hadn't even gotten to the point where I could admit that I was pissed off. But I have a younger brother and a younger sister. My younger brother, when he was very young, he was an angry kid. He'd throw tantrums, and I mean, I talked to him about it today. I mean, he was just out of control. And at some point I decided I wouldn't be like that. I was not going, and I contained any anger that I had. I probably was already on a track to being the good kid. That was my model. That was the template for me as the oldest. And but I was then proud of it as a young kid, all the way through high school and into college too. I was proud of the fact that I didn't get out of control, just because I saw someone else who had been out of control. And my dad would get really pissed at him because he was slamming all the doors and making a bunch of noise. And I'd be sitting in my room and I'd be upset that my brother was doing it. I'd be thinking to myself, Scott, why are you doing this? Scott, why are you doing this? And so I'd see my dad's anger in response. And I was like, well, I'm not going to be like that either. So these are the two guys in my household. And they'd have some clashes. And man, not only did I feel helpless and really, really weak in those situations, because I loved both these men so much, but I also just decided as a naive child that I'd never experience that. I would never, that's a Freudian slip. I would never be that. And so the consequence was I couldn't experience that even in myself, even when I was actually angry, I didn't even know it. And it took me a lot of digging to figure that out, and just reflections from other people. It seems like you're angry. Oh, I guess I am. Just like that sadness, man. I mean, I needed that reflection, just really simple reflection like that, to get my own emotions in a way that was, that seems like it's so basic. I always thought of myself as a smart person. I was pretty intellectual, as successful academically, but this is like a whole part of myself that I didn't really understand, and I'm still working on every day. So anyway, that's not celebration. It's not the sadness, but it's a different emotion that I have, because I'm human, and I decided early on I wasn't going to ever embody it, and I didn't ever admit to embodying it for a long time. And finally I realized it's a lot better if you just express it in a place where it's okay. You don't have to be slamming on doors. That's not the only way to do it. Oh, yeah. I'm 30 something years old now. I can be angry and figure out how to make it safe, and also then afterwards make a wise life decision instead of getting carried away by it.
This is really key for, which I think men in general. I know you're familiar, and I've mentioned to guys, I had him on the show, Dr. Robert Glover, you know, no more Mr. Nice Guy, which I didn't actually get to ask him, you know, what sort of percentage wise, but I know from other commentaries of guys in men's work is, you know, it's the Rod Boothroyd from King Warrior Magician Lover. I spoke with him and he said about 80%. He has found that 80% of guys lean in way sort of in an out of balance way on the magician archetype, which that's the rational mind, and the rational mind has no feeling. So it's like almost like 80-85% of guys have disconnected from anger. The nice guy persona, the, you know, predominantly reared by our mothers, and then initially in schools, a lot of the time culturally it has been women again. So it's like we learn, so many guys learn to, okay, anger is not welcome. So it's a potent part of it. What I'm curious about, Taylor, is going from, you know, young boy, young adult, where you were like taking pride in, oh, I don't lose control, I don't go to those places, I don't do anger, you know, go me.
Yeah.
To
so much pride, so much silly pride I had, man. You nailed it right there.
Was that projected judgment? I was like, go me. When you're saying that, I'm laughing because I was like, I had the exact same thing. I was actually like famous in my family. It's like there was like within, I was the bug to them when I did it to them. But it was like if anybody ever had like, I remember there was one moment where there was a major thing. We had like a big family get together, and a local pub / B&B, whatever, family members went in, and there was an issue. The B&B didn't tidy up the place, and our family members decided, like, screw you, I'm not giving you all that money. So, like, it was our family members coming into our local village, sort of creating this major upset. And my mom and dad was like, Mark, when that publican rings, you answer, because you have the capacity not to get angry. And it actually, like, part of that pride was like, I didn't get angry. I didn't. You know, I just remained calm. And the guy got so pissed that he ended up not taking the money and I took so much pride. It's like, I don't get angry. And it was like highly manipulative and just totally inauthentic from me. So lots of like the go you, that's aimed at me. Yep. That's aimed at me. But yep. What I'm curious, Taylor, is connecting more and more. And I love, you know, you're still working with it. So am I. Like it's bringing that, the deepening levels of embodying that anger and allowing that be felt. But what I'm curious is, what benefits has that brought into your life as a man, where more and more you're like, ah, I have anger there. Like, what does that capacity to just be self-aware and accept that there's anger, what wisdom has that brought, or how has that helped you direct your life in relationships and other areas in a better way?
Oh man, a lot of things. Knowing that I'm angry, which that's the step I needed that I didn't have, just knowing that I was angry when I was, helps me know when I need to be active, when I need to use my body, when I cannot, for myself, for me, can't rely on just like taking space, sitting down. I mean, the truth is that the anger that was coming up felt like it was directed towards my fiance, and that's the woman that I loved and that I, the person in the world who I felt closest to, spent the most time with. So this was the hardest place for me to bring up this emotion that I decided I wasn't going to feel, I wasn't going to express. And it felt like if I did bring it up, it was going to escalate conflicts instead of de-escalate them, right? So I felt really trapped with this stuff inside of me. It's better to feel, to know that you're angry than to just feel out of control. And so I felt out of control. I felt like I didn't know myself. I felt like my thoughts wouldn't stop. I mean, if I returned to an argument, for instance, I'd make stupid comments that weren't helpful. I'd be acting out, basically. I would think of, okay, this is what I need to say. And I'd come back to dialogue and I'd say the thing I wanted to say, but then immediately I'd get a response and I'd go back over the edge. And now, since I hadn't even recognized that I was angry or how angry I was, now I was saying things that were actually making things worse. I was just digging a hole. And looking back on it, it's humorous, but in the moment, I'm thinking to myself, I'm a capable person. I have a job. I have friends. I have some money. I have a relationship. Why am I so incapable of having the reasonable dialogue that I want right here? And it's because I didn't even know what I was feeling. And I couldn't just say, I'm really angry about this. Couldn't say that. I would just be in fight mode. I would be heading towards the target without saying where I was or what I was up to.
It's so eloquently put. It's like just bringing in that, like, that feeling of, oh, why, like, I'm such a competent guy, but like this, like, WTF in these moments repeatedly. And like, as you speak that, I'm like, I go to 12 years with Matilda and been getting a lot better, but still, when I get caught in those moments, it's like, okay, you're 10 minutes in, this is going nowhere. I was like, there's that element where you're digging a hole. I know guys listening in, there again, statistically, fucking most guys, it only varies in the intensity of how destructive it comes, but nearly every single guy can resonate. Yeah, just that incapacity to express and own anger. I love your distinction there. Anger is not out of control. I just wanted to slow down. I just, those words I jotted down straight away. It's like, that is a major thing. I know I've had lots of conversations with guys on this, but one guy recently, and I think it was so textbook style of that. It's like, the association that anger is out of control, is wrong, is immoral, etc. And the judgment. And as a result of the judgment, it's like, well, you're never allowed to go there. His dad was super aggressive growing up. Super aggressive. With his mom, with them, they were always living in fear. So he literally, sort of like you, was like, made this judgment call when he was younger. It's like, I'm never going to be like that. Which is like, okay. And it was that distinction. It's sort of like, anger is not out of control. I know I've spoken with you and the guys, what works for me, a reminder to guys listening in, I've spoken to this before, but it's like, anger is not aggression. And I really think, you know, that's so key. It's like, aggression out of control, I think they're the same things. That you're just hammering the shit out of somebody. You're making an enemy of the person, which is never going to work. But anger is different. Anger is like, there's something for me. There's something true. There's some part of my truth that is wanting to come true. I always want guys, you know, listening in on this topic to hear that.
And I'll say the next thing, sorry. The next thing is, I couldn't ask myself as simple a question as, why am I angry? They're just simple questions, right? But if you can't say I'm angry, you can't ask yourself why. So even if I was going to rely on my magician, my rational mind, I was blocking it from doing its work. I wasn't allowing myself to even go to the next step. Because if I can ask why am I angry, often there's something underneath. There's rejection. Well, I can't have sex when I want to. And that feels more like a life or death situation than it does a little bit less pleasure in the next hour for some reason, because it's triggering all of my rejection stuff or abandonment stuff, or I'm actually sad, right? Like, there are all these other options of things that are underneath the anger, but I wasn't getting there. I was just super powerful, scary force, even to me, welling up inside of me and then going to aggression. And in fact, I have to say this also. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
No, it's good. This is like we're surfing the wave. I hate the conversations, and I have had some where I've had, like, as podcast hosts, like some conversations where you ask a question, there's a 2 minutes answer and silence. And then there's the next question. I fucking love the just fucking go, go with it, man. Wherever you're going to go, I know full well it's going to be of immense value to guys listening in. So rock on.
So for me, I decided not to be angry because I saw my brother angry, associated with out of control. I saw my dad angry at him, associated with out of control. And I associated with not loving each other when they should have, right? These are people, this is my family. When I experienced this level of anger and anxiety and just being out of control of my own mind, I just broke open to empathy to both of them in a way I'd never felt before. I broke open to a level of love and acceptance of both my brother and my dad that I did never have, because I put myself in a different category when I made that promise to myself as a kid that I wasn't going to ever feel that, express that, act that way. And I realized I've got the same stuff in me. And that's like one of my core experiences that brings me and glues me into men's work, because it keeps happening. That might be the most powerful one, because like I'm tearing up just saying it. I mean, I started talking to my brother about what was going on in my life in a way I'd never done before. Just brought a whole another level of vulnerability, told him how much I loved him, how much I had misunderstood and judged him inappropriately and failed as an older brother. I mean, and, wow. You know, just cried on the phone with him. And you know, he even said things like, you know, it was like we were living like a cartoon relationship or something. That was the depth that I had brought to that relationship, because I just didn't understand how to get closer with him. So this was healing for me. I mean, this isn't just a dark, unlikable side of myself that I learned to make friends with. It was healing to me in that I considered myself more a part of the humans around me, and I considered them more a part of what I am, right? That was a very, and when I talk about that, it's still just a lot of love and acceptance emerges. So it needed to happen. It needed to happen. So I just wanted to fill in that last piece for me where anger brought me. I mean, of course, there are other times when it the practical next step is something like, I need to renegotiate an agreement of some sort that I have that I either agreed to and I shouldn't have, or I'm realizing I can't actually fulfill, you know, that's the more often next step from getting angry. But just admitting it in myself, and for other guys, it could be anything. It could be sadness, it could be any other thing that they've blocked themselves off to. But for me, I'd block myself off to anger. When I reconnected with it, I ended up reconnecting with other men and the men who I love the most. And then that became my template for, oh, this is how I can connect with men in my men's group. This is how I can connect with all other people with similar bodies to me, because we share the same stuff. This, we got the same stuff inside us. So anyway, that's the long story of where anger carried me.
Oh, that's it's just poetry. I there again, you I've always said this about you, you know, the feedback's like, man, Taylor, you just have this eloquence of putting things that I'm feeling anyway. I'm like, you just nailed it. And this conversation is just further deepening proof of that. It's like your words, I felt more part of the humans around me. And that struck me as being so profoundly beautiful. And yet there's like a tragedy and there's a grief that comes in me, because that's like, you know, whether I didn't know that's what I was looking for on the deepest level. When I came to men's work, it was like inner world falling apart, marriage falling apart, pure necessity, you know, help me fucking swim. You know, there was no, but looking at it now, I think you're at the real core center of it. It's like my deepest yearning was ultimately connecting with myself. But it's this yearning of, I was feeling so, because of that judgmental mind, that like no connection with anger, the defenses are up, judge the world, meant to be strong, feel weak, can't share with anybody. I was totally alienated.
Yeah.
You know, like in modern society, you know, statistically, it's this tragedy of modern society. Jordan Peterson speaks so eloquently and potently to it. You know, it's like, and I just call bullshit. Like my wife, she's amazingly powerful, and she's done tons of, you know, women's work, and from the female perspective, I just call bullshit in this whole feminist thing. It's like, there's a human thing. There's no, and Jordan Peterson speaks to us like, you know, speak about the human condition and the human issue, but this whole men versus women, and like, it's like, come on. Anytime it gets polarized, it's like, let's not forget men. You know, it's like 9 out of 10 suicides. It's a man that's jumping off that bridge. You know, it's like, and what's that at its base? It's like not feeling connected. You can't do that. If you're feeling fully connected with humanity around you, with your wife, with your kids, husbands listening in. I know for myself, I wasn't feeling connected with Matilda. I wasn't feeling connected with my girls. Walking around 24/7, mentally masturbating in my head. I couldn't feel. I wasn't feeling connected. Wasn't ultimately feeling connected with myself. So your language there, just that men's work for you has supported you and connecting with your anger in that to be more part of the humans around you. That's what gives life meaning. You know, when you're connected. If you're disconnected, where's the meaning, really?
And it didn't just connect me with other men. It was a big part of my experience. But Jordan gets angry, and when she did, I just completely rejected before I admitted and started to connect with my own anger. And then I could see, oh, yeah, this happens to her. This happens to me. This is a human thing. And so it helped a lot holding space for that. I still struggle, but it's a lot better than bringing up some 5-year-old promise that I had made to myself with the wisdom of a 5-year-old to a 30-something-year-old relationship, which is what I was doing on some level when I brought that judgment forward 25 years later or something. You know, it just wasn't working. Wasn't working. And she felt rejected because I couldn't be present with her anger at all. I just thought, this is complete bullshit. You can't do this. This isn't right. To a human.
How potent is that for every single guy listening in? Because what guy in marriage, deep, long-term committed relationship doesn't struggle with the unpredictable feminine just going, I'm crazy with you. Why did you do that? What I find is, I know now, getting way more comfortable and with men's work, it's like this, I get exactly why you bring that up. But it's, you know, men's work for me is just being able to sit with my own emotions and not judge them. I go, that's perfectly okay. And from there, I do get what you're saying. I just, guys listening in, it's like, if you struggle, and I know it's like there again is the 99%, but probably 100% of guys listening in on some way, shape or level, there's a struggle to hold space for when your woman's with pace when she's down and like, et cetera, for her spectrum. And women are more, they're still suppressed by modern society. They have, there's not an open-hearted allowance of them, but they're more in touch. Like once a month, actually, my wife has said that to me. It's like once a month, they're brought there energetically, spiritually, the period that the much misunderstood part is like a sacred spiritual journey that women go through. Like once a month, whether they like it or not, they can be stuck in their head for like 25 days. But like for 3, 4, 5 days, they're brought there and they're reconnected with that. And that's hot to handle when you don't know how to hold space for your own emotions. So it's another potent point you're bringing up. I'm just glad I didn't bring a script here, Taylor, because you're just making the script. You're scripting this as you go along, sir. I'm loving it. My job has been really easy.
Well, it's lovely to share this stuff. You know, I'm still in the middle of learning so many things. So I can get a new kind of pride from the things that I've passed through over the last few years. But I just want to share how grateful I am to have the space with you now and then in group every week to be piecing this together and to work with the raw stuff. And then every once in a while, I get to put together a story looking back on, wow, okay, I've actually gone through some things. And I'm not a five-year-old in that part of myself anymore. I'm growing up. I always thought I was older. I always thought I acted older than I was. And I was told that. I was told I was an old soul. But in that sense, I think I was faking it till I made it. Or I just had an exceptional level of self-control that served me for a long time until it didn't.
With the time that we've left here to play with, and there's such an immense amount already spoken to, I'm like, it's so complete almost in level, but there's one part, because I know it's a part of the thing we do on a weekly basis. And I came into the group and it's like the shadow work. And shadow work, by, you know, it's one of those things where it can be frightening for guys to hear, because like the shadow can be mixed. I know doing a shadow work course with Connor Beaton, there's this speaking to, it's not wrong, it's not negative parts. It's just like shadow, what it means is, again, it's this core thread of what you were saying. It's like these parts of you that you have forgotten, and the new parts of me coming forward. That's part of deep work. That's why we call it deep work. You're going in to get these forgotten parts of your full authentic expression. What has been your experience of shadow work? What has shadow work brought to you? And maybe if you can, in your own words, give a little bit of a, for guys listening in that maybe it's like shadow work, just the whole term is like sort of like, what the hell does that mean? If you can give like a little intro of, through your words, you don't have to give like a Carl Jung definition, but like through your words as a man experiencing it firsthand, what's your description of what shadow work is for you through your experience? And then just give a little bit of how that has supported you.
I mean, I think on some level, shadow work is asking, here's an example. I think it's best to use an example. We might challenge guys to answer something like, what I don't want you to know about me is, and then to fill in that sentence. Now, what happens when you do that, and guys listening may do it already, in your own head, you play the sentence. And then you fill it in, and then you're like, oh shit, I just came up with something I actually really don't want to share. Anyone done that yet in your own head? Okay. The invitation is to share that, because there's a reason that you haven't yet. And if you are trying to build trust with these guys, and you're trying to bring vulnerability, and you're trying to own the parts of yourself you haven't shared before, that's exactly the kind of thing that you should volunteer and let some level of control go to why that has been blocked inside only you, with no one else knowing about it, with all the energy that it takes to do that, even if you don't realize it for so long. So that's just one example. I mean, these are the kinds of exercises that we do. Some are round robin. Sometimes it's a longer share for several minutes. One guy has the floor to answer a question or speak on a theme. So one part of that is that you are developing your awareness, because what you do when you ask yourself, okay, how am I going to fill in a sentence before you speak to the group, is you're watching your thoughts. And we're not always every moment of the day, unless you're a monk. And even if you are, most of them admit that they're always developing this skill. You're not even recognizing that you're thinking in words, right? So we're inviting you to recognize that you're thinking in words. And when those words are things you actually want to hide, admit that there may be some gem, some gold in there for you to work with in this context that is made as immaculately safe as we as facilitators can hold it to be. Because when I answer those questions, I'm answering them in a way I've never answered anywhere else. And there's something incredibly freeing to that. And usually there's sort of a spiral of other people being like, oh, me too, I have that. And then there's this settling of like, oh, we've all fucking been hiding that in our own heads, scared shitless that if anyone sees us express it on our face or write it in our journal and then they find it later, that we're going to be destroyed. And it turns out there's a lot of freedom to just speaking it. And we're not going to spend our whole day doing that, but if you do that in short, potent doses with the right facilitators and the right group to hold you in it, you can learn a lot about yourself that was not lit. It was, you weren't shining the light of your own consciousness on it, and you're just turning the lamp in a slightly different direction. Yeah. Seeing what's in that center.
I love the answer. The bit that jumped out was like the amount of energy, all the energy it takes to keep them there. And it's like, that's the whole thing. You know, like, guys, listen, I know, like, raising level in my marriage, like, it was shadow work for me, because there was so much. I was afraid to go there with my woman because there was so much I thought it was dangerous to express that part, that it's just locked that shit, you know, front end of the castle. I use the castle metaphor, front end of the castle, paint it up, you know, front end. Oh, fucking, like, to the world, to my woman. But it's like, this back end, I mean, it's broken down. It needs restructuring. It's pretty shitty. There's weeds everywhere. It's like, I was embarrassed and ashamed. So I couldn't go there. She wanted more from me, more intimacy. I couldn't go there. You know, the anger. I couldn't go there with my kids because, you know, certain things, I was getting really pissed. So I couldn't go there. So it's like all of this energy to keep this persona and try and navigate a full life. I mean, you can do it for your early years, you know, early 20s. But guys listening in, try and do that when there's a beautiful, powerful woman waking up in the morning, going to sleep at night, and all in between. Try do that. Try do it with parenting. Try and do it in a business. Not like the further into life. It's not just in marriage, but it's nay impossible in marriage to keep all of that together. And the amount of energy it takes to keep that persona doing this dance to try and avoid all of these things that we just need to keep tucked away. It was such wisdom there. The amount of energy it takes. It's one of the key things, and the liberating effect of unknot that stuff. You're just human. Get the fuck on with your life. Get the fuck on being an amazing husband. Get the fuck on just being an amazing lover. Like, you're like, okay, you have all the sexual baggage. I put my hand up. Shadow work and sex for me has been amazingly potent. Because I was holding myself back and my cock wasn't working. Erectile dysfunction was actually because of all of this packed away shit. Yeah. So yeah, amazing wisdom in that.
And what I'll add on to that is, I was unconsciously early in this relationship, I was unconsciously only presenting those sort of deepest secrets or shadows to Jordan, to my partner, and deadly afraid of bringing it anywhere else in life. And what makes me more powerful in my relationship with Jordan is when I have worked on those bits of myself with other men in men's group, because that's where I do my work, been held, been able to express myself and make mistakes and feel free to let it just flow out of me, then get comfortable with it, get feedback on it, do it again, do it over and over. And then I bring, if it's something I need to bring to her, I've already built my own inner safety around it. I've already built my own comfort and acceptance of it. So I'm not craving and her validation and fearing her rejection when I share something about myself, because that puts us in a place where she feels all of that pressure. And she's only one person, and she has her own triggers because she's human. And if she can't, if that's not the thing that she's ready to deal with right now, then not only is she going to be surprised or upset or triggered or whatever, but I'm going to be feeling like my legs are cut out from under me at the same moment. And what do we do then? Well, then we get in a fight.
Yeah. Again, the spontaneity of you bringing this up, it re-triggers David Aida wisdom. In my lone wolfing, but I had epic shit in my ears, definitely. It was from my initial, when I reached out to a tantra therapist for the first time, had 5 sessions. So it actually came from not lone wolfing, but I was listening to it incessantly. And one thing that Aida was speaking about was like keeping long-term, you know, sexually enriched, enlivening, keeping the fire in a relationship from a conscious polarity perspective. It's like, guys, he was repeatedly saying, you know, don't make your woman into the housemaid. You know, it's like, don't make her into your bookkeeper. Don't make her into your therapist. Don't make her into, like, you know, your problem solver. Don't make her into your, like, your personal assistant, your fucking organizer of your life, et cetera, et cetera.
I wanted all of them.
You know what I mean? But we do it. Like, when I heard that first, like, oh, man. And definitely the inner work, it's a really, empowering thing. Your point is so potent for guys, because yeah, she'll hold space. Your woman loves you,
yeah,
and she wants the best for you. You know, we forget this thing. She wants the best for you, but it's a real massive weight to put on your partner's shoulders. Of, I have all of this shit. I have 30 or 40 years, which is okay. It just makes you human. But to put those type of conversations with her as the primary person. If she's, as you say, it's like the only person, the primary or the only person, that's an immense weight. Where, as you're saying, Taylor, it's like, yeah, just like jujitsu, you know, jujitsu is like you hit the mats and you train intensely, you're fucking body slammed, you get all of that shit. So when you come out and you're walking through life, you're just, your nervous system knows, man, I've been grilled. I've had my training done. I just, like people in jujitsu, it's not just for street fights. It's just in life. I really get that. I know in men's work, it's like, it's this training. My nervous system knows, okay, 2 hours every week, I go there, it's on the mats, you know, go where I don't want to go. But my nervous system has this resiliency of, man, I can take any conversation with Matilda. I can take any conversation with the girls. I don't have to back off, and I'm good. So really amazing point there, yeah, at the end. Taylor, we're coming into landing. I do want to bake into context, guys. Part of this initially for me, the initial inspiration was in the podcast, Be the Husband She Brags About. I really want to just bring that point. I was like, hey, I've got to actually explicitly just have an episode or a couple of episodes, get the message out there. There was that, but I also want to leave it open that currently now in this is not part of me, just for full transparency, this is not part of my work within Be the Husband She Brags About. This is like me sharpening my blade, my sword in, you know, men's work facilitation. I do co-facilitate with Taylor, but my invitation also had it. I want to be explicitly clear with you, is Taylor and myself, the group we're leading at the moment, we went through a recent transition. You know, it happens. We have a full group, 8-9 guys plus ourselves. Recently, a few guys dropped off. They dropped off. They've been there long term. You know, going back to college, work changes in work, etc. It happens in men's groups. So we have openings. I really want to put that explicit open invitation out there. to guys, we have openings. And as I say, Taylor, you, for me, is like, you couldn't be a more potent leader. You know, even if I wasn't in the group, if I left in the morning and it's like anybody comes to me and goes, I don't want to do the fucking beat a husband she brags about. Fuck you, Mark, with all your fucking husband shit and your marriage shit. I just want a bunch of men, you know, where I can be a man and that. Like, there's only one group on the planet. If you're leading it, I'm going to be advising them there. Taylor, is there anything you would like to add to this, just coming into landing? Is there any like final words of wisdom or in the invitation, what you're speaking to guys that might be interested coming in? Any final thoughts? It's like Jerry Springer style. Wasn't there Jerry Springer is like the final word? I heard his this is the Jerry Springer final word.
well on that note, I would just say, if stuff that we're talking about resonates with you, don't fall into the trap. This is what I would have done before I got desperate. Don't fall into the trap that you take it away and you think you just do it all in your own head. I mean, we've mentioned that point a few times, but I now know, I have the humility to say, I need to show up in a group 2 hours a week to get the accountability on the things that I've spoken to before, to get the consistency and practice to express myself in different ways than I've done the 30 years before. And to really build trust and connection with other guys where I feel safe enough to go a little bit further each time. So don't, you know, if you're listening, you're fucking awesome, but don't overestimate what you can achieve alone. What's the saying that they have on that? Like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, something like that. That is how I view men's group. It takes the humility to say, this is where I do my work and I'm just going to keep doing it here. And there's a commitment. I mean, we have a high bar for guys. You're not showing up, then you're not embodying our expectations. We believe it takes, for our group, we want guys there. We want guys to be able to look around and see the same guys who were there last week and the week before that and the week before that and know each other. Because once you get a few months in, you start offering challenges and reflections to each other that you could never do on week one or week four or week 12. I mean, there's some guys in there that I've sat with now for 2 years, and I can't wait until I can get on a podcast someday and say, there's some guys in this group that I've sat with for 10 years. Like, how powerful will that be? I mean, this just psychs me up. And so maybe some people hearing that get terrified, because that's a lot of accountability. But at some level, that's what I've started to crave. And what I've seen is that the longer guys stuck around and find a group that fits, if ours isn't the one, then it's not the one. Mm-hmm. But find somewhere where you can show up consistently and put whatever resonated with you in the last hour and a half into practice over and over again, because that's how you actually grow.
Yeah. Beautiful words. You're reminding me, I had Amir Khaligi in as a guest, one of the first few guest episodes. And I asked him the same thing. It was like, I am totally biased. And like the title of this is like, why every man must have a men's group. I got to put it out there, guys. I'm completely fucking biased. So I'm going to put it out there. But Amir really eloquently put it, like you did. I put it to him, it's like black and white. Does every guy have to have a group? He's like, well, no, Mark. Every guy doesn't have to have a group. And he spoke to guys listening in. It was like, you don't have to do anything. It's like, what I would say to guys listening in is, if you don't have a men's group, you're going to be limited in what you can embody and achieve in life. And I was like, okay. So there just is this, every man is sovereign. But the provocative question is, do you want to be limited in what you can embody, you know, in your marriage, in your life, in your parenting, in your outer goals, in your mission, in your work? It's like, do you want to consciously bring that in? And if not, if we're triggering that interest. So reach out immediately at the end of this episode. To do so, click down on the podcast description. You will see a link to send Mark a voice message. Send me a message. telling me your name, your surname, and explicitly stated that yes, you are interested in connecting with Taylor to know more about the men's group, I will connect you guys in via email and you can take it from there.
As I say, I can't advise a better man on the planet at the moment to be your men's group facilitator and leader. If you're feeling that love, you're feeling that inspiration, I do set the challenge to you. Reach out at the end of this episode, because implementation delay impales our tenacity. I call it idiot syndrome. It's like we just like, we have a great idea. Oh, I love Taylor. And yeah, men's group, I'm going to do it. And then life fucking hits you cups of slaps and it gets a bit chaotic and you forget about it, you know, and it doesn't happen. And then a year and a half later, as Taylor said, the shit hits the fan, whatever, and pressure and desperation re-triggers the idea. Pull the trigger today. If you're feeling courageous and you're feeling inspired, reach out to Taylor today. Make shit happen. Taylor Cantrell, it has been an immensely enjoyable conversation for me. Thank you so much, man. So much love and appreciation for you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you holding the space. And this is a wonderful conversation and not surprising seeing all of those that we've had before.
And final words, kudos to you, man. Podcast episode number one. This is your first.
Yes.
I didn't want to put that pressure in like in the very beginning, but it's like, man, you're like a duck to water. Fucking epic guesting. Thank you so much, man. Well done.
Well, great hosting. You help a lot. Thank you.
Guys, coming into landing here. Thank you. You know, hats off and full acknowledgement for you showing up every single week, every single episode. Well, there's multiple episodes every week now. Reminding ourselves why it is we do what we do here on a bi-weekly basis. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing kingly day.